We're beginning our class in the book of Esther. We will have a long introduction to the book of Esther. We will go through much of the story of Daniel as an intro to the book of Esther. But first, let's understand a little bit the importance of the book of Esther. So, our story really takes us to a broad overview of Jewish history. If we were to think of Jewish history as beginning with Avraham Avinu, leading into Yaakov descending into Egypt, and then the Jews entering the land of Israel. So in the year 2448, we leave Egypt. The year 2488, we enter Israel. And from that point onward, a major part of the Jewish psyche was the land of Israel. Part of being Jewish was the land of Israel. And then, in the days of David and Shlomo, so then part of being Jewish became being connected to the temple, to the Beit HaMikdash. And they had opened miracles in the Beit HaMikdash. They had prophets who were telling them what was going to happen. They had false prophets, but they also had true prophets. So life was on a different plane. And so no one could believe that a temple would be destroyed. The prophet says the temple will be destroyed, and the people wouldn't believe it. And the prophet says the Babylonians will overrun Israel, and the people couldn't believe it. Now, just so we get a little bit of perspective as to what's going on, let's quickly run through our story, and then we'll come back and look at it again. The people had just witnessed the greatest empire on earth quashed overnight at the city gates. Imagine, you're in Jerusalem. The Assyrian Empire has come and laid siege on Jerusalem. The Assyrian Empire brags that they have enough soldiers that can just walk through the rivers of Israel and dry them up by sheer numbers. The Assyrian Empire has taken down the tribes of North Africa, Egypt. Every nation could not stand up to the Assyrian Empire. And so the Assyrian Empire come and they have one of their generals is Rabshakeh, who is a Jew that has turned to the enemy side. And he's blaspheming outside the walls, and he says to Chizkiyahu, the pious king, "Who do you think you are? I'll give you as many horses as you want. Come fight with me. I'll give you the horses. I'll supply the horses. You think you could fight? Your people are starving. They're eating their own feces. Jews, come out. I invite you to join me in the Assyrian Empire. What are you fighting for?" The Assyrian Empire was so awesome that as they ascended, as they approached Jerusalem, they looked down from the hilltop at Jerusalem. They were at the city of Nov. And they looked down and waved. And they said, "What, that? Jerusalem?" Od hayom b'Nov la'amod yenofef yado. He waved his hand and said, "I could spend the night here. I don't have to rush down. That little city will come down in no time." So he surrounds the city. He has over 250,000 generals.
Generals.
So he's got millions of soldiers there. He has naked Egyptians. He's taken the Egyptian people into captivity, brought them, Tir HaKa, the king of Cush. He's taken the people of Cush, and you have a whole people standing there naked, stripped to the bone. The Assyrian Empire has taken their wealth. Now, remember, the Cush Empire was mighty enough that they dared revolt against the Assyrian Empire. They thought they had a chance. And so the Assyrian Empire is standing there and showing the Jews, "Look, this is the empire that thought they could do it. Look at them all standing here naked." And now, that night, an angel comes out and reveals to the soldiers the song of the angels at night. And the soldiers all have these convulsions. They can't handle it. And they drop dead like flies, one after another. And there's one little midget, a man who's an amah tall, just like Pharaoh, we learned about last night. A little man who's a very brave warrior. He has a history, this man, because he used to write. He used to be the king's scribe. And then he became a very, very vicious warrior. His name is Nebuchadnezzar. And this warrior wakes up in the middle of the night to see the soldiers all around him flopping dead, 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 dead. And he sees this man walking from soldier to soldier, and the man is an angel. And he sees the angel, and he sees the Assyrian Empire crumble in one night. He sees it with his own eyes. He sees the plague devour everyone. There's almost nothing left. And the Jews, who had no chance, they had nothing to eat. They were starving inside the walls. They were promised by the prophet, things are going to change overnight. And suddenly they see an open miracle. So Chizkiyahu is very proud of this miracle. And later on, when Chizkiyahu has another miracle, when the sun rises too early by 10 hours, and the Babylonian king at that point is very concerned because he thinks his servants let him oversleep. He says, what's going on here? I slept into tomorrow. And they say, no, something wacky happened with the sun today. And then they find out that this was all in honor of Chizkiyahu, that Hashem changed nature. So the Babylonian king sends emissaries to Chizkiyahu. Chizkiyahu is so pious he could be the Messiah. And Chizkiyahu is so proud that going in the way of Hashem has brought him to this state, that he takes them into the Holy of Holies. He takes them and shows them the whole temple. And then the prophet comes to him and says, what'd you do? And Chizkiyahu says, well, the Babylonian emperor just sent messengers. I thought I have to show them around. So the king says, really? So you showed him everything, the treasures. You showed him the Kodesh HaKodashim. You should know that that Babylonian empire is still going to come and take your descendants and castrate them. And your very descendants are going to be eunuchs in the king's castle. You showed him your private of privates. You showed him the Holy of Holies. All of that will be exiled by the Babylonian empire. So Chizkiyahu, the great, pious, mighty Chizkiyahu, has a tragic ending to a certain degree. And that ending is the beginning of the end of the Jewish people, because Chizkiyahu is so pious he doesn't even want to get married, because he foresees that his son Menashe will be a mass murderer, and his son Menashe will bring about the destruction of the temple. So Chizkiyahu remains single his whole life, until his cousin, Yeshayahu the prophet, comes to him and says, you gotta have kids. What Yeshayahu doesn't know is that Yeshayahu will ultimately give his daughter to Chizkiyahu to have children, and they will have that son Menashe, who will ultimately murder his grandfather Yeshayahu. Yeshayahu is demanding of Chizkiyahu. He's telling him, Yeshayahu walks in, and he says, Chizkiyahu is lying ill in bed, and Yeshayahu tells him, God said you should give your last will and testament because you're going to die and you're not coming to the world to come. Chizkiyahu says, what's going on here? Me? I'm not coming to the world to come? What did I do? Yeshayahu says, you have a mitzvah to have children. What are you doing? Chizkiyahu says, well, I know that my children are going to be wicked and destructive to the Jewish people, so I never got married. Yeshayahu says, okay, so you're not coming to the world to come. You have a mitzvah. You don't have to do God's calculations. You have to do your mitzvah. So Chizkiyahu says, okay, if that's what God sent you to tell me, so then let me marry your daughter. Maybe your merits, my merits. Maybe it'll help. I'll have a good children. Yeshayahu says, didn't you hear? I told you you're dead. I told you God says you're dead. So why should I give you my daughter to marry? Chizkiyahu says to Yeshayahu, he says, excuse me, sir. Did you finish your prophecy? Because son of Amoz, finish what you have to say and get out. Because I have a tradition from our mutual great-great-grandfather, David, that even when the sword is lying on a person's neck, and the sword is so sharp that all you have to do is let go, and it slices through the neck. Afilu cherev chada, munachat al tzavaro shel adam. Even if that sharp sword is lying on a person's throat, al yimna atzmo min harachamim, a person shouldn't hold himself back from asking mercy, because within us we always have that drive to talk to Hashem. But then we also have that drive to hold back. You walk into davening and there's a conflict. Am I going to connect? Am I not going to connect? There's a drive to connect, and then there's that, let me hold back. So al yimna atzmo, don't hold back from asking for mercy. So if you're done talking, you're welcome to leave. Yeshayahu leaves. Chizkiyahu turns to the wall, starts praying to Hashem. His prayer is accepted, and he lives and lives and marries Yeshayahu's daughter and has that son Menashe. He has two sons, Menashe and Rav Shakeh, twins. And he's carrying them on his shoulder to yeshiva one day. And they start talking between themselves. And they say, look at Dad's bald spot. Look at Dad's bald spot. Dad's bald spot is good to serve to serve on a chicken, to serve on a chicken, to serve on a gildani, some kind of chicken, I think, to idols. Chizkiyahu says, what? What are you guys talking about? He throws them both off his shoulder. One dies, Rav Shakeh dies, and Menashe lives. And Menashe will take the throne. And Menashe will take every Sefer Torah in Jerusalem and erase Hashem's name from every place it appears and put in the name of a different idol in place of Hashem's name. Menashe will fill Jerusalem from gate to gate with blood. Menashe is a mass murderer. And that's what Chizkiyahu feared. Menashe ultimately murders his own grandfather, Yeshayahu the prophet. So Menashe brings about the prophecy of the destruction. What we have to remember is that after Menashe is taken into captivity, put into a cauldron, and boiled alive, and starts praying to every idol he believed in, and nothing works, he says, Rabbonu Shel Olam, look, as a kid, Dad told me you exist. So now I'm turning to you. If you're up there, save me. And if you don't save me, then I guess you're no different than all the rest. So all the angels come clambering in to the Rabbonu Shel Olam and say, don't accept it. Why, such a wicked person, don't accept his prayer. And the Rabbonu Shel Olam, the Medrash says in figurative terms, made a hole in his own throne, bent down and grabbed that prayer, picked it up and saved Menashe, and miraculously he was returned to his throne. And then Menashe does tshuva. It says there are rooms in heaven. There's the regular Jew who comes to heaven, and then there are people who get the elevator. They go up. There's a ger. He goes up. They have a special base medrash for gerim. He automatically gets into the elevator. Zoom, he gets taken up there. There's chozer b'tshuva. He also goes into an elevator. He gets up a flight just for being a chozer b'tshuva. And the base medrash he goes into, you know, the Rosh Yeshiva is Menashe.
But
so
didn't this in Mishnah or something that he doesn't get along well?
I don't think so.
No,
I don't think so. But if you want to see the Mishnah,
I think it's in Mishnah.
Correct. Here you go. Right. Here you go. So on that Mishnah, the Gemara brings that it was Chos B'Tshuva. Mm-hmm. Yeah. On that Mishnah, the Gemara brings that they were, when they were going to discuss that Mishnah, so it says, you want the full story, but we don't have time to remind you on a Thursday
What's
night. We'll get back.
It's
the 10th parak in Mishnah and 11th in the Gemara. The Gemara, they printed it as 11. No one could believe, after all the miracles they saw, they wouldn't believe the temple would be destroyed. And when the temple was destroyed, the Jewish people had a breakdown. The elders come to the prophet Ezekiel, and they say to him, why should we keep Torah anymore? You know, if a husband divorces his wife, he can't come and make demands on her. You divorced her, finished, what do you want from her? If a master frees a slave, he can't come back and say, now work for me. So if God kicked us out of the land of Israel, why do we have to observe the Torah? Meaning in their mind, the temple and the land of Israel were intimately connected to the Torah. And if there's no temple and there's no land of Israel, so why do we have to keep Torah? And then a new message comes. It's called Purim. Hashem tells the Jewish people, I'm with you wherever you go. Your connection to me is Torah and the teachers of Torah. The temple is a facilitator. The land of Israel is a facilitator. But you know what the contract is? The marriage contract is Torah. And that you take with you wherever you go. And so the story of Esther is the turning point of Jewish history. If Yom Kippur is the turning point of the written law, if the stand at Mount Sinai is the turning point of the written law, where Hashem appears and says, hey, I'm here, and I have demands, and this is what I want you to do, and you're going to live up to it. So then the turning point of the oral law is Esther, where Hashem says, wherever you go, you got it. You have a Mordechai, you have an Esther, you have the men of the great assembly. And so the message of the story of Esther is the message that will carry us throughout the exile. Temple destroyed, land of Israel destroyed, people exiled. That's one of the pivotal messages of the story of Esther. And this message is encapsulated with a beautiful medrash. There are two medrashim. Tonight we'll discuss one, and later on we'll come back and discuss another one. So, yes, Mayor.
Just, Where is that Midrash that says that, not Midrash, where is like the, I think it says that Chizkiyahu said, even until like the next and the next, because I heard before, I just like never knew what it was.
It's a Gemara in Tractate Brachos. It's also a Midrash Rabbah. It's also a Midrash HaGadol. And it's important to note the other sources because the Gemara only quotes part of the story. And the full story you could find in Midrash HaGadol.
Where is
that movie? That's a 12-volume set. You could find it upstairs in the library. It's a Yemenite Midrash.
Where would I find it inside of
it? It's its own thing. It's 12 okay. volumes in its own right.
But that story is 12 volumes?
Ah, no, that story. I have in mind that it's somewhere around Parshat Emor, Kedoshim or Emor, but I have to look it up. I'm not sure. What?
I guess someone up there wrote.
No. I don't think so. It's 12 volumes. It's a lot to remember. I happen to have, you know, when it struck me when I saw it, so. I'll, there's a lot, Jim, if you remind me, I'll try to look for it.
Who's Machloket with it?
Huh?
Who's Machloket, whatever Nash has.
Coming back to the Midrash. So the Midrash tells the following story. There was a king. He had a son. And the son was misbehaving. So the king kept telling him, son, you got to behave. You can't behave this way. And the kid wouldn't listen. So the king keeps telling him, you know, I'm going to have to punish you. And he tries punishing him with this and that and the other thing, and the kid continues misbehaving. And the king tells him, I want you to know, I cannot have a son behaving this way. This will not continue. If you're going to push me too far, then I will banish you from the kingdom. I will throw you out into the woods. You will have to deal for yourself. You cannot be the spoiled brat that allows himself to behave this way just because you're my son. And if you won't learn your lesson, then I will banish you to the forests. And of course, the kid continues misbehaving until one day the king says, that's it. And the kid says, no, Dad. And he says, you know, you've had enough warnings. That's it. And the kid says, Abba, you're going to do that to me? And he says, what choice do you leave me? You know, I kept asking you, I kept warning you, I kept begging you, and you take advantage of your status here in the kingdom. And so the time has come that you have to leave. And the king summons his soldiers, and they take the boy on the chariot, and they take him out far away. They take him so far away that he doesn't know where he is. And they take him into this big thicket, and they take him deep, deep into the forest. They drop him off, and they ride away. So the kid looks around, and he has no idea where to go. He's got no civilization. He's got nothing. And he looks around, and it's midday, and he says to himself, I have to ensure I have something to eat. I have to ensure I have some protection at night. And he starts looking around to find berries he can eat and to find some form of coverage. And as he's looking around, he hears a rustling. He turns around and he sees some baby cubs. He looks at the cubs. And then he hears some other rustling and huffing and puffing. And he turns around and he sees Mama Bear coming. And the mother bear is coming. And he starts running. Now, he's intelligent. He knows he can't outrun a bear. But he figures, what choice do I have? He's running, and he hears the mama bear running after him. And he's running for all he's worth, and he goes around one tree and around another tree, and he starts feeling the breaths of the bear on the nape of his neck. And he gives one final yelp and leaps forward into the brush. And he's lying there, keeping his head and neck covered. And he's waiting for the pounce. And he's waiting. And all he hears is whoosh. He's scared to look up. He looks back. And he sees that a knight, one of his father's knights, happened to be riding through the forest. And came with an axe and hacked the bear's head off. And continued riding out. And he says to himself, wow, unbelievable. What a coincidence. He happened to be here. That's unbelievable. I could have died. I was about to die. Okay. So now he looks at the body of the bear. He's got food for tonight. He's got coverage. He's going to be able to cut it open and make himself a garment. And he starts slicing it open and thinking about what he's going to do. And He's preparing it. And as he's preparing it, he looks up and he sees a wild hyena coming. A cheetah, a lion, whatever it was, some wild animal. And they're looking at the carcass of the meat. And he looks at them and they look at him. And now he knows he's finished. So he's trying to think, what can he do? But he doesn't have much to do. So he starts climbing the tree. And as he's climbing the tree, he thinks back, wait a second, cats can climb trees. And the cat starts climbing up after him. And he's climbing up and he takes a branch and tries pushing it down. And he knows in 1 second it's going to take a flying leap at him and he's finished. He doesn't know what to do. He starts waving it this way, that way. And it starts crouching. It's about to jump up. And da-da-da-da, he sees a knight charging at it. Charging, his spear is out, and he flings his spear into the animal. The animal flies off the tree. The knight follows the animal, kills it, and rides away. And the kid says to himself, what a coincidence, twice? That's unbelievable. I can't believe it. So he sits down to eat the bear, and now he has this other wild animal to eat. And he's thinking about what's just transpired. And he looks up, and there's the king's advisor. The king's advisor knows that this son is the sole heir to the throne. And the advisor says to him, look here, I've been waiting for this moment. Now you're mine. When I wipe you out, there will be no heir to the throne. And then I can take the throne. Ah, you heard the story before. So the kid figures this is doable. But then he draws a sword. So the kid looks at him, and he runs behind the tree, and he's running this way, that way, back, forth. And finally, the guy has him cornered, and he starts approaching with his sword drawn. And you guys know what's about to happen. Just before he could kill the kid, suddenly an arrow hits him in the chest. The kid looks up, and there's one of the king's knights. Another arrow hits the advisor, and the knight rides off. And then the king says, okay. This didn't happen by mistake. Three times, okay, now I understand. My father wants me to feel like I'm alone. My father put me in the forest because I deserve a punishment. And I'm going to have to fend for myself. He's not going to help me. But when it looks like I'm about to get killed, he's keeping an eye on me. Somehow, somewhere, he has someone watching me, and I'm not going to die because he's taking care of me. That, says the Medrash, is what happened with the story of Esther. When we were in exile, the first feeling was, we're finished. The Jews cried. They didn't know who they were crying for. They said to the prophet Jeremiah, does God hear us from here? What are we going to do? We're crying here. Are we all alone? And Jeremiah said, don't you see the Shekhinah's come out to Golus with you? Hashem didn't stay in Israel. Hashem's out here with you. But when they saw the story of Esther, the message of the story of Esther was, even when everything seems to be destroyed, Hashem is there with you. And so the story of Esther is that shining light. Hey, you're not alone. The destruction of the temple, the destruction of Israel, does not mean that you're alone. Again, coming back to the connection to the Torah being the connection to Hashem. So that's introductory. Now we have to go back and see introductory to the story of Esther from a historical, from a Tanakh perspective. So that's introduction number one. Now let's go on to introduction number two. And Be'ezrat Hashem, on Thursday night, we will have a late night and we'll have introduction number three. There we will discuss the prophecies of Jeremiah and the 70 years that we'll touch on tonight, and we'll see with more depth, Be'ezrat Hashem, Thursday night. Okay.